From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Tonight, our pre-Christmas special for you, followed by Miracle Open Lines later on Coast to Coast AM. Here's what's happening. Well, if you happen to have gotten the little ones, the Colorful Hearts teddy bears from Build-A-Bear, take heed to this story. The stuffed bear's toy eyes could loosen and fall out, posing a choking hazard to the kid. The voluntary recall is in cooperation now with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission and Health Canada. Now, so far, thank God, no injuries reported. The bear was sold by the St. Louis-based Build-A-Bear nationwide and online from April this year through this month for about $18. Almost 300,000 bears were sold in the United States, 13,000 in Canada. So just be aware of that story. And they went nuts around the country. Across the country, the long-awaited release of the Nike Retro Air Jordan basketball shoes resulted in fights, arrests, the use of pepper spray by police as they attempted to calm shoppers, many of whom had waited outside stores overnight. It was almost like a Black Friday. The Air Jordan Retro Concord sneakers, costing $180, are based on a design that first went on sale in 1995. Adding to the frenzied demand from fashion-conscious shoppers and sneaker collectors, some stores have been given as few as 12 pairs each. In Seattle, 1,000 people lined up at 4 in the morning. Police had to use pepper spray on about 20 people there who were fighting. The Congress has approved a very short-term renewal of a payroll tax cut a day after House Republicans caved into overwhelming pressure on the issue. The bill extends the tax cut as well as unemployment insurance for about 2 months. Lawmakers held voice votes on the deal, requiring then only a few members of Congress to be present. And consumer spending was slow in November, and a gauge of business investment fell for a second straight month, suggesting the economy lost some of its wind, some of its momentum. Greg Hunter with us, USAWatchdog.com. Wanted to bring him in. First of all, Greg, Merry Christmas to you and your family, and thanks for the year you've given us.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you. Thanks for having me on. I love being on Coast to Coast AM.
So we roll into 2012. Economically, how do things look in your crystal ball?
George, terrible. I mean, they spent hours, weeks, days, tons of time. You've heard about this payroll tax cut. It amounts to about $40 a week for most people. And I'm not underscoring how tight people's budgets are. But George, we have Fannie and Freddie this quarter took $20 billion. This is a black hole. No debate on Fannie and Freddie. Former executives of Fannie and Freddie are being sued for fraud by the SEC. So we know there's fraud inside of Fannie and Freddie with these mortgage-backed securities and these subprime loans. We know that the Attorney General in Massachusetts, Martha Coakley, has also alleged fraud with the banks. This is where some of the stuff, a lot of the stuff came from, the biggest banks in the country. Not a word, no debate on the backdoor, continued backdoor bailouts of the banks. But, oh, this payroll tax cut, the president has a speech, everybody's got it on, he's delivering pizzas, somebody could lose their pizza night. I'm not anti-Obama, but listen, there's no leadership on either side of the aisle. Fannie and Freddie is a $5 trillion liability to America, and we're worried about a $40 a week pay raise to Americans. You got to be kidding me. This is unbelievable.
It doesn't make any sense. Greg, lie to us. Tell us things are going to be great next year.
Listen, I things aren't going to be great next year. And if you take a look at the housing market, this is another thing. Realty Track just came out. And they say more than 4 million foreclosures are in the pipeline. Now, George, now you think about this. This is just a real simple math problem. We have interest rates at around 4% for 30-year money, partly because of the Federal Reserve forcing rate down, partly because of loan demand. 90% of the mortgages come from the government right now. What do you suppose is going to happen when interest rates go back up, and they will, to just say 6.5% or 7%?
Ouch.
What do you think is going to happen to real estate prices?
Yeah.
This is a mess, and Congress is diddling around with the president, the executive, and the congressional branch, the legislative branch, diddling around with a $40 a week pay cut. You got to be kidding me. This is frightening.
All right, relax. Enjoy Christmas. We'll talk to you in the new year, Greg.
Merry Christmas.
All right, my friend. Okay, imagine this. You're going through an airline security system, right? And you're holding a cupcake, and they stop you. Why? Because they think it could be a bomb. A woman says a cupcake she tried to take on a flight with her sparked a potential security threat this week. Rebecca Haynes says she was going through security at the airport in Las Vegas when a TSA agent pulled her aside and said the cupcake frosting was gel-like and it was enough to constitute a security threat.
Man.
A U.S. firm has created a toaster that creates an image of Jesus on every single slice it creates. Vernon-based Burnt Impressions created the Jesus Toaster. The creator, Galen Dively, came up with the idea after reports of people seeing apparitions of Jesus and slices of toast and other inanimate objects. Santa about ready to start his journey pretty soon somewhere on this planet. And who watches the skies for us but none other than Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Stephen, if we want to see Santa, what do we do?
Well, first, George, Merry Christmas to you and all the Coast to Coast AM listeners. In about 47 minutes, the entire world is going to be going to www.noradsanta.org. And this is so cool, George, because back in 1955, a Colorado Springs Sears store put out an ad for direct contact for kids with Santa, and they misprinted the number, and they got the commander-in-chief of the then NORAD Space Command, Colonel Harry Shoup, and they continued this tradition as we know today. And it's so cool, George. I'm so excited because I'll be watching along with a lot of Coast listeners. And, you know, they track Santa in so many ways. They have a radar called the North Warning System. They track him with satellites. And in 1998, they started camera tracking this whole network around cities around the world. Canadian CF-18 jet fighters are also involved, and F-22s and other American aircraft to track, of course, the old man, who I understand is tanned and well-rested, along with Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, Blitzen, and above all, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. So this is an exciting time to keep your eyes to the skies. I'd like to say, ho, 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 Merry Christmas to the entire Coast to Coast AM audience. George.
Steve, I understand Santa may be passing over your house this year and not going to stop.
Absolutely. And you know something? I'm going to be paying particular attention to that, and I promise some photos right up there on the Coast to Coast AM website if I'm successful.
All right, Stephen Cates, our astronomer. Now, we're going to come back in just a moment as we start our special Christmas Eve-type programming for you. A day before, Weird Christmas Stories with Vala Ventura. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Vala Ventura was introduced to the very strange and unusual at a young age. Her first game was, get this, a Ouija board. And family picnics and cemeteries were very common outings. She spent most of her years exploring graveyards, underground tunnels, and abandoned mansions in and around under Nevada City in California. She's been on the program before. It's been about a year she was on when we talked about Book of the Bizarre and Beyond Bizarre. And tonight we're talking about her ebook, The Christmas Troll, right here on Coast to Coast. Vala, welcome back.
Why, thank you. It is such an honor to be here. I'm so excited.
We're going to have some fun. Any relation to Jesse, by the way?
No, you know, I get asked that a lot. I wish. I'm a fan. I was a WWF girl, so...
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. But I do. I got a lot of emails from people that said, oh, you've got Jesse's daughter on tonight. But no, no.
Well,
relation.
You know, if he's listening, I would love to meet him. So you can arrange that.
We could do that.
Happy.
Yeah. He's been on the program before. Okay. The Christmas Troll. Here we are. You know, I've been debating with producers Lisa and Tom for the last 2 weeks. And they said, you got to get Vala on and Chris also. And I said, well, yeah, sure. I like Vala. She was on a year ago. What are we going to talk about? And they said, well, weird Christmas stories. And I said, come on, there are no weird Christmas stories. And then I started reading your ebook. There are a lot of weird Christmas stories, aren't there?
That is exactly what I thought, George. I thought, well, my publisher said, we'd like you to do this ebook collection, which is basically a project of creating a digital library of sort of forgotten stories of the paranormal and occult. And I've had my nose in volumes of dusty books for the last several months looking for sort of unusual stories that in old books, you know, from the turn of the century that people had, I wanted to reintroduce readers to things that had a bizarre twist. And there I was kind of stumbling along, and I happened to find something that was all about Christmas traditions. And the more I read it, the more I realized that there are almost more freaky, weird Christmas stories than there are Halloween stories. And there's some traditions that almost sound like something that you'd hear about on All Hallows Eve, which completely impressed me immediately. Huh. And so I was very excited to find this collection of stories. It's basically a collection of folklore originally put together by a man named Clement Miles, who was sort of an amateur anthropologist, early 20th century author. And
he was very good at digging up things, wasn't he?
He dug up some literally very interesting things, and I had a few items sort of in both of the books of the bazaar. There were a few little weird kind of Christmas things, so I always kind of had in mind to look into that more, because, you know, I mean, Christmas is nice, but sometimes it's just a little too cheerful, and we want to hear about some of the scary stuff even at Christmas time. So,
well, you know what? That's right. I mean, I weighed that. I said, maybe I just want to do a nice little fun Christmas show for 4 hours and, you know, fun and frolicky. And I said, Coast to Coast is edgy, and I can spend a couple hours tonight at least talking about some of these strange things that have happened on or around Christmas. So that's what we'll do.
And you may, you know, if you have young children listening, you just be warned. This could give them nightmares.
Is this going to be one of those disclaimer shows, Barla?
Does it need to be?
Well, you tell me. We're going to be talking about some of these things.
I bet there's a bunch of kids out there listening, thinking they're going to get some stories about the magic of Christmas, and they are. But it's a coast-to-coast kind of magic.
Okay, all right. Parents, if your little ones are around the radio, some of these stories could be a little spooky or a little strange. I'll leave it up to you what you're going to do. And maybe even you, parent, maybe you get scared a little bit, so you take heed a little bit. Let's start, Varla, with this one about Christmas Eve water. What the heck is this all about?
Well, there is a belief, and it is primarily was very popular in old Europe, that if you left water out on Christmas Eve, it would turn to wine, which is great.
That is good.
There's definitely religious, I'm sure a lot of religious overtones here. But the other aspect of that is that if you were to go out to a well on Christmas Eve and draw your water, you would find that it is not wine. It is, in fact, blood. But you don't want to look at it, because if you look at it, it means you'll die that year. So this is a very popular belief, probably a good idea to not, one, drink wine in the middle of the night and then go out to the well on a dark, cold night, but also a way to, kind of keep people in line should they think that they can just go wandering around an icy well.
Do you think somebody actually died within a year after doing this, and that's how the myth started?
You think it's a myth?
I hope it is.
Myth. Yeah, I think that's actually true of most of these superstitions and sort of strange tales beyond the folklore. I do think there's usually something that happened that keeps people, or there's a fear of something happening. For example, you know, that's very true with the Irish puka, for example, is a creature that tends to prey on drunk men in particular. And so you don't want to be wandering down a, you know, country road drunk, coming back from the pub too late at
staggering
night, because you might get tricked by the puka. What better way to keep your loved one at home than convince them that there's a sort of snarling black dog out there waiting for them?
Oh, you got to be careful. You know, you call your ebook The Christmas Troll. Tell me about the title itself.
The Christmas Troll, well, that came from, in the Scandinavian countries in particular, there are a lot of stories about strange creatures that lurk in the night. And my favorite one was the story of the Scandinavian Christmas Troll, that you didn't want to go out after dark on Christmas Eve or any of the 12 nights of Christmas, because you might encounter these horrible trolls that got together with the witches, and they rode on brooms, and they rode on wolves, and they got drunk, and they danced all night, and they danced around a fire. And if you saw them, you know, you'd be terrified. They might follow you home. They might torture your family.
They sound like the kind of people we want to go out and party with.
Yeah, I mean, some of us might go out seeking. I know you have many listeners out there that are very into cryptids and cryptozoology, and so they sure. might be more inclined to hunt for the Christmas troll. But I just thought, well, that's kind of a really kind of a great story, and I think you think of you know, you think of happy elves and you think of the magic of Christmas, and there's certainly a lot of overlap there with sort of the magical and the mythical aspects of Christmas. But I was very delighted to be just sort of getting deeper and deeper into all of these stories of really pretty scary creatures that might follow you home. And, you know, if children are out wandering at night, you know, they had to be aware of this particular bogey that might actually slit their stomachs open.
Oh.
So there was definitely some, you know, there are some vicious beasts out there, not just, you know, ugly cavorting trolls.
Why, Varla, during this period of Christmas that's supposed to be fun and festive, would they have these stories? Why did they try to scare the living daylights out of people?
Well, I mean, I think some of the, you know, you better be good because Santa's watching you. I think that these stories are some of the origins of what our modern day perception of Santa and his nice list and his naughty list. I think if you want your kids to be good, what better way to keep them in line? You know, you don't have to threaten them or give them a timeout. You just say, you know, Krampus is going to come and beat you with rusty chains if you're bad.
Oh, my. Well, listen to mine. A kid opens up a huge box for Christmas, and it's a jack-in-the-box, a huge jack-in-the-box. He opens it up, the thing pops out and grabs the kid and brings him into the box, and the lid closes. Now, that's kind of scary, isn't
that's
it?
That's terrifying.
That would be horrible.
It's got the creepy clown. It's got the toy that comes to life. It's got, you know, many elements of horror.
I mean, how'd you like to be your parent there? You get a kid a jack-in-the-box, and it pulls him into the box, and you never see him again.
You know, you would feel a tad guilty. I don't know what happened to Billy. He just disappeared.
Yeah. Where is Billy?
Morning.
Just a tad guilty. So, what about these stories in Norway, Sweden, and that area about ghosts that roam forests?
Yeah, well, again, going back to the similarities to All Hallows Eve, I think it probably has something to do with how dark it is. Especially in these countries, you know, the days are very short. There are hours and hours of darkness. And like with Halloween, we have this night when, you know, the dark comes quickly and the veil is believed to be very thin. There are many, many cultures that believe that the time around Christmas Eve and Yuletide is even more supernaturally charged. And so this is a time when the veil is extremely thin, and in fact, it's so thin that the dead often just step on through, and they roam the hillsides, and there are ghosts, there are, you know, sort of fairy-like creatures, there are witches, and in some Scandinavian countries, it's very traditional to lay a supper, not unlike people may be more familiar with the idea of a dumb supper, which is a practice that has come back into popularity. At Halloween time, you create an entire meal and you sit and you have a meal with your, you invite a deceased loved one to join you, and you make offerings to them. So this is kind of a similar idea, that you would lay out a whole separate Christmas supper for those spirits that might roam in. And it was a way of honoring the dead. It was a way of ensuring good luck in the new year and protecting your family. And again, I think that's, when I was reading these things, it has such a resemblance to leaving milk and cookies out for Santa in its own way.
With a twist.
There's this idea of leaving an offering so that, you know, you get something in return. And, you know, I think that it's not exactly milk and cookies, but it's got this idea of leaving something for a magical or supernatural being, and then, you know, instead of presents, you get, you know, good health and luck and love in the following year.
We're going to come back with Varla Ventura. We will venture back as we talk about the Christmas troll later on Coast to Coast AM, of course. We'll take your miracle open line calls. Here's St. Louis's Jim Manley taking you home. We'll be back. You know, about 6 months ago, I was looking at the 2011 calendar in December, and I noticed that Christmas Eve and Christmas Day fall on Saturday and Sunday. And as you know, I made this pledge to you 9 years ago when I started doing this show full time that we will have live shows for you on holidays. It's just something that I've stuck with and something we will do. Well, I looked at the calendar and says, oh my gosh, I'm not working Saturday and Sunday, but I will if we have to. And I'll just tell you what kind of a staff we have. So we went to Ian Punnett, of course, who does Saturdays, and Ian is winding down his commitment to Coast to Coast for health purposes next year. And we went to George Knapp, and George does a couple Sundays a month, and this Christmas was going to fall on one of George's Sundays. And I had Lisa check in with him and just to make sure that they were going to be here live. If not, I was going to come in and do it. And both of them said, absolutely, we will be doing the shows. We will be live on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day as well. And thank you so much to Ian and George Knapp for that. Next year, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, Monday and Tuesday. So I'll be here for you. But that's the commitment. When holidays are here, we'll have a live show for you. I'll be here live for you on Sunday, January 1st as well. Ian will take you through New Year's Eve live on Saturday, December 31st. When I come back in just a moment, more very strange stories of the Christmas troll with Varla Ventura on Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, this is Jerry Corsi. I want to wish George Norrie and his wonderful audience throughout America happy holidays.
Well, thank you, Jerry. Appreciate that. Varla Ventura, our guest for a couple hours here as we talk about the Christmas troll and other Yuletide stories. Varla, it seems like Europe seems to be the area where a lot of these weird stories come from. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, some of that may be because just the nature of the book that I was really into with Clement Miles. I would say that 90% of them are European, and of those, most seem to be from the Scandinavian countries. Some of that, of course, is those are the countries that celebrate, you know, Christmas and Yule celebrations.
Who do you think, you know, sat around writing up these stories or coming up with these ideas? I mean, even Clement Miles, he assembled them. He went out and got them.
He was sort of like in the same way that the Grimm brothers went around and collected their fairy tales.
Yeah.
He was sort of inspired by that. They were a little earlier than he was, but so he was sort of an amateur anthropologist in that way and folklorist. So, I mean, most of what he writes is not that in depth. I mean, to really get into some of the stories, you have to dig a little deeper. But I think, you know, he had that kind of mindset, which I really appreciate because I guess I consider myself an amateur. I consider myself an amateur anthropologist and folklorist in that way, only I just have a tendency to look specifically for the weird and the freaky. So those are the things that stand out to me.
Tell us the story of Ruprecht.
Okay. Well, Ruprecht is a most prevalent in German and Austria. Some of the Eastern European countries have sort of a similar beast. And many of these creatures actually have a lot of crossover from country to country. There's a similar being that appears. And Ruprecht actually accompanies Saint Nick. So Saint Nicholas comes and he, you know, bestows gifts and good health and wealth, and he's sort of this radiant, joyous, robed saint. And lo and behold, behind him comes this creature known as Ruprecht. And basically, Ruprecht looks a bit like the devil. Very similar to the German Krampus, which is a devil-like sort of goat creature with a long, snarling tongue and horns. And often in their Christmas rituals in this part of Austria, there would be someone dressed as St. Nicholas, and then there would be someone dressed as Ruprecht. And they would actually, like, have a whole goat hide on and have these sort of, like, glowing eyes. And like Krampus, St. Nicholas was too good to punish children. So Ruprecht would do the dirty work. He would beat children if they were bad. If you're pretty bad, you just got coal or something like that instead of
a gift.
If you were kind of even worse than that, but not like the worst child in the village, you would probably get beat with a bundle of sticks. If you were worse than that, really acting up and misbehaving, not obeying your parents, not doing your work, not doing your schoolwork, not memorizing your prayers, all of those things that you were required to do, then you would get probably beat with chains. And if it went beyond that and you were just a heathen child, you'd be thrown into a sack and dragged home, and Rupert would eat you for dinner.
And I do remember that old myth about giving kids coal, though. Remember, for the dirty, naughty soul or something like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you were bad, you got coal in your stocking. And, I mean, that was a threat even when I was a child. Not that I really believed it, but there's another that's actually very common, to get coal or rocks, or, you know, instead of sweet candy. Or even in some countries, it's just black candy. And then you can see the kids that were naughty, their teeth are black. So I think that's why they would do that. But there's an Italian tradition, sort of in the early part of January, so it'd be considered like during the 12 days of Christmas, of a witch named Befana. And Befana jumps from roof to roof, much like Santa Claus, and she leaves presents for good children, and for bad children, she leaves coal. She doesn't beat anyone that I know of, but she is occasionally known to sweep up a kitchen, which is very nice for all the moms and dads.
Tell us some stories. You, in your work, you talked about the belief system of animals talking, and you've got some stories about that. What might be one of your favorites?
Well, so on midnight on Christmas Eve, it's believed that all kinds of, at the stroke of midnight on Christmas Eve, that's like the height of supernatural powers. And it's believed that that is when, like the water turns into wine and the wells run with blood and all of that stuff happens. And also animals converse and we are able to understand them. So one of the stories that I read in his, one of Clement Miles's collections was about this woman who had heard that this was true. And she was sort of, it sounded like she was a little bit distrustful of her animals. She was sure that they were kind of like out to get her or something. So she hears her dog and her cat, and they have this conversation about her and how they really don't like her. And she's really not very nice to them. And what's going to happen is some thieves are going to come that night and they're going to knock her over the head and kill her. Well, she hears this, and she's so worried that this is going to happen that she flings open the door and goes to run out, and she runs right into one of the thieves who knocks her over the head and kills her. So,
Merry Christmas! Yeah, really. You've got a story, too, about young women that want to learn about their future husbands on Christmas Eve. They pull out, a loaf of bread or something like that?
Oh, what is that? Oh, that's a great... So there's a lot of belief that you can, like with any supernatural kind of evening, there's fortune-telling that can go along with it. And so one of the stories is that if you wish to see your future husband, this is a Slavic belief, but I think there's also some accounts of it in some of the other Eastern European countries. You pull out a loaf of bread, and you lay it out with a plate and a knife and a fork, and you go to bed, if you're a young woman. And so you go to bed, and then in the night, this is, again, on Christmas Eve when, ghosts and spirits have full reign of power. The ghost of your, or the spirit of your future husband will come in and will fling the knife at you. If the knife doesn't hit you, then you know that your future husband is going to be a good and kind man.
Good
if
odds.
If the knife hits you and hurts you, you know that he's going to die young.
All right. Now, on the other hand, what about a guy who wants a future wife?
So this one to me, when I read this, I thought, something else has got to be going on here. But while everybody else goes off to church or services or, you know, the local rituals, if a young man wants to find out what his future wife will be, he stays home, gets naked, and sifts ashes through a sieve. And it has to be in the dark. And then after he's done sifting these ashes, and it's the ashes of the Yule log, which is important because that has magical properties, of course, the spirit of the wife will come and will pull his nose three times.
Pull his nose three and times, okay.
That's how he'll know. I thought, are you sure it was the nose? Because that just seems kind of, there's a young man in the dark, naked, with ashes. It just
pull his
seems
nose.
Really odd.
Pull his nose.
Pull his nose, see what happens.
There's supernatural energy that revolves around the so-called 12 days of Christmas that you researched. What was that?
Oh, well, that's really interesting. The way that, I had never really thought about the sort of ghostly aspect of the 12 days. And I was actually reading a Charles Dickens ghost story that was published in a collection of Christmas stories that he put out in the late 1800s. It was called Three Christmas Stories. One of them is part of this ebook collection that I've been working on. And in this, he talks about the 12 days of Christmas. And what he does is he basically takes up residence in a haunted house during the 12 days of Christmas. And on the 12th night, he invites all of his friends to come to this haunted house and observe the ghosts in the different rooms. This is the Charles Dickens story. That's it. Kind of has this like Clue, you know, like the movie Clue. It's got this kind of,
sure,
you know, everybody stays up at night. And so that is actually how I kind of came to this other collection in general, because I started researching ghost stories from the 12 nights of Christmas, and So that's how I got to this. And in particular, there are a lot of, it's a windy night by nature. And in the Norse countries, the wind especially has a lot of significance in terms of the gods and the goddesses and, you know, who controls what. So if you were to go out on any of the 12 nights of Christmas, you may be harmed, potentially killed, certainly haunted by some of these, they're called raging hosts or raging ghosts, and they're wind spirits that cut through and pick you up and drag you places. And again, it's trying to discourage people from roaming by themselves out at night, but also part of that, the howling winds. And those actually, in some countries, give way to werewolf stories. The howling winds. In Ireland, there's the will-o'-the-wisp, which some people may be familiar with. Those are sort of like flickering lights that might also appear as a dog, that could appear as a, you know, sort of a ghostly figure. And they basically, they exist to throw you off course, to sort of trick you and keep you from, you know, thinking that the supernatural doesn't exist.
What might be one of your favorite stories here in your book, The Christmas Troll?
Oh, well, I think probably my favorite is one of the scariest ones, and that's the story of and if there are any Greek speaking listeners out there, I'd love a correction on the pronunciation, but the best I can do is Kalakantheroi, also sometimes known as the Carcantheroi, and this is another extremely frightening beast that is kind of like Krampus, and kind of, you know, like Ruprecht is
half human, like half animal, right? Yeah.
Yep, half human, half animal, covered in gnarly black fur, long snarly tongue, glaring red eyes, and tusks and monkey arms. And this sort of lurks between, you know, the hours of midnight and 4 or 5 a.m. in the darkest, dankest place. But if you're foolish enough to, say, leave your door open or go to a dark, dank place on these wee hours, these beasts will just terrorize you. They'll follow you. If they get into your house, they'll tear your house apart like a tornado. They'll destroy all your furniture. They'll eat all your food. They'll turn your wine sour. I mean, they're just really nasty beasts. And one of the things that's most interesting about them is they sort of exist in the Greek culture in very much the same way that the vampire exists in the Romanian or Slavic countries. It's this idea that it's actually was once a man and received a curse, and they pass it on from beast to beast, year after year, century after century.
These creatures, though, Varla, could be real.
Oh, yes. I would say that, you know, I mean, as much as, you know, there's the sightings of, you know, the cryptids that are out there and UFOs, I mean, I think that many of these beings have their origins in fact and actual sightings. I mean, you have to believe to a certain extent or you wouldn't really care.
Yeah. Are some of these stories, do they revolve around demons during this time of year?
Well, I think there's that. There's definitely a lot of when the, you know, many of the stories will be of the Christ child coming in, and then the Christ child has a devil that follows them, like Krampus follows St. Nicholas or Ruprecht follows St. Nicholas. So, yeah, there's definitely demons. There's actually a great, not to keep plugging the collection, but there's another story that I came upon in this collection that was written by L. Frank Baum, who is the author of the Wizard of Oz series and, you know, all the Oz books. And he wrote this great short story about these demons that surrounded the Laughing Valley, which was where Santa Claus lived. And the story is so much like the Grinch or something, of these demons that sort of lurk. And I think there's lots of stories with I don't want to say the Antichrist, but the antidote to what we might think of as the jolly and the good. And again, back to what you were saying, I think it is a way to sort of keep, you know, these things have their origins in truth and in practicalities as well. A way to keep kids in line all year round.
Well,
really.
I'm sure it worked. Where would the people get your ebook? How did they get it?
So they're only available as ebooks. The entire collection is available. You can get it on Kindle. You can get it on Barnes & Noble. You can get it on Sony Reader, you know, whatever your digital reading device is. For a limited time, you can go to my publisher's website, which is Red Wheel Weiser, and that's W-E-I-S-E-R, all one word, and you can get a free download of The Christmas Troll, as well as The Kidnapped Santa Claus. So you can get those. I'm not sure how long they'll have them up there, but you basically get a free PDF of it. So it's not the same as, you know, having it as a Kindle book, but you get all the content, and you even get the cute cover when you do that.
Who would want to kidnap Santa Claus, Varla?
Well, you know, you should ask Tim Burton about that, because he has a whole movie about kidnapping Santa Claus in The Nightmare Before Christmas. That's a great story. I was very delighted to find that L. Frank Baum had written more than Beyond the Oz series. He had written several sort of short stories, and he sets it in this place called Laughing Valley, and that's his North Pole. And he has created a whole cast of characters, different kinds of fairies and elves and creatures that appear. And Santa lives in this valley, and around this valley are these mountains, and there are cave-dwelling demons in the mountains who wish to kidnap Santa Claus.
That's all we need. Well, Varla, stay with us. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about The Christmas Troll. Also, we're going to start taking phone calls with Varla. Perhaps you've got, at least this hour, your weird Christmas stories, your strange ones. See how good you can get. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.